Welcome once again to Word on the Hills, with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, and my co-host, Felicity Signal-Reed. Each week at this time, we speak with a local author, get a glimpse into their lives, find out what prompts them to write, what they're working on at the time, and have an opportunity to hear them read from their work. Today, we're very pleased to welcome Susan Statham. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Susan is a painter, a teacher, a lifelong student, and a writer who has used her knowledge of the art world as the background for her mystery novel, The Painter's Craft. Susan graduated from the Ottawa School of Art, Algonquin College, the National Portrait Academy, and the University of Waterloo. She has painted commissioned portraits of many well-known people, including the Honourable Lieutenant Governor of Ontario, Pauline McGibbon, and her husband, Donald. She's taken many writing courses at Waterloo and at Loyalist College, and after a career teaching public school and at a private art school in Toronto, Susan moved to Grafton, where she continues to paint and teach and write. So, Susan, would you say you are an artist who writes or a writer who paints?
Well, these two disciplines have always been a part of my life. When I was two, I borrowed, in quotation marks, my older brother's crayons and created my first wall mural in my bedroom. My mother failed to see its artistic merit and promptly scrubbed it off. But a born optimist, I reapplied it. Her opinion, however, didn't change, and this time I got my first, and I'm told my only, spanking. The wall scrubbed clean again, and this time she also hid the crayons. Within a year or so, though, I was given my own crayons and proper coloring books that I was allowed to use at the kitchen table. Now, somewhere around that same time, I also began writing, which really is scribbling because I didn't know how to write, stories to fairies that I believe lived under our kitchen sink. You see, the panel that was in front of the sink had these four horizontal slits in it, and on either side of the sink were proper drawers. So I thought the only reason to make these openings would be so that the fairies could breathe. And I was convinced that they would understand my scribblings and wrote these little notes, folded them up, and slipped them through the slats. I continued to do this for quite a while, and I think my mother must have cleaned them up. Because one day I happened to open the cupboard just underneath the sink and I saw this forlorn little pile of folded papers and realized that these slats did not lead to fairyland and there were no fairies reading my stories. But to answer your question, I certainly wouldn't want to give up either discipline. I see each scene before and as I write it. But with the emphasis on that visual, I'd have to say I was an artistic writer.
That's one way of getting around it anyway. So how do the disciplines work together for you? Does one feed the other, or are they two separate things in your life?
No, I think they work together. When I'm painting, I tend to create a story around the painting. I studied psychology at Algonquin and at the University of Waterloo, and I've also worked in a psychiatric hospital, so I'm really interested in personality and why people behave the way they do and how you can read a person by their face. So I'm particularly interested in painting portraits, and usually these are done from photographs. So I can't actually talk to my subject, but I try to develop a relationship with them, and in my head I'm talking to them. Particularly if I'm doing paintings, and I've done a few portraits of deceased people. So right. I build a whole story for them, and I ask them, what's your favorite color? What shall I do the background? Work at it that way. With genre paintings, that's a still life or even a landscape or a couple of little kids doing something. They're always a narrative. So there's a story. The cover of my mystery novel, The Painter's Craft, shows a young woman dressed in white opening a box. I thought of her as Pandora. But you could make other interpretations from that. She's actually the neighbor of a student. And I borrowed costumes from the Oshawa Little Theater, and she's wearing one of these costumes. So I set her up.
And so if you start out on the writing side, do you paint an imaginary picture of your characters? Do you always see the characters you're creating?
Yes. When I'm writing, I visualize the scene as I write. So my protagonist and amateur detective, Maud Gibbons, is also an artist. And so in the painter's craft, when she receives a painting that prompts her to investigate a murder, she has to go back to art school. And you, the reader, will go too. And so I'm, well, there's a lot of autobiographical information right. in this book, so it's really me going to art school, and I'm talking through Maud. So very similar experiences between us both, and you, the reader, get to go to art school too.
Yeah, and to have a foot in each world, in the writing world and the art world.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
Would you be able to read a bit from The Painter's Craft for us today?
Yes, I thought I would start at partway in. The Painter's Craft is a mystery and a cozy, which means that there's a limited number of suspects. Chapter 1 opens with Maud receiving a letter from a lawyer's office. She soon discovers that her former art instructor, he's recently deceased, but he has left her a bequest. And at the lawyer's, she learns that this bequest is a painting. And there's five other people at the office. They also have received paintings, and we'll soon learn, along with Maud, that these are the suspects. And I'll start reading just at the point where she gets back home with her painting. It's been wrapped in brown paper, so she's quite excited to find out what she has. My furry feline companion greets me at my front door and follows me into the living room, watching as I gently place my new treasure on the table before taking a minute to clear a spot on the fireplace mantel. My hands tremble as I struggle with the tape. At last, I have the wrapping pulled back, and grasping the stretcher bars on either side of the canvas, I flip it over and place it carefully on the mantel. Dark and brooding, it is wondrously painted. Here is Shakespeare's Dane in grisaille. But not totally, for there's the faintest hint of alizarin crimson on a velvet waistcoat peeking out from under a heavy cape. Looking at the face, I am at once drawn to eyes wide with curiosity, and the familiarity of the bone structure causes me to wonder who he used as a model. My Hamlet is young, clean-shaven, and with a somewhat feminine aspect. As always, Charles's use of chiaroscuro and sfumato create a figure so lifelike he appears to breathe. I stand before the mantel in silent admiration. I can hardly believe that Charles has given me such a gift, and with my nose inches from the painting, I examine each brushstroke, noting the fine use of oil glazes. Checking for his signature, I discover he's written something in tiny letters just below it. Although I squint, as tight as I can, it's impossible to read. I bring the painting to the light and realize the only answer is a magnifying glass, which I retrieve from the top drawer of a battered oak desk. Through the glass, I read Act 1, Scene 5. How strange! I've never seen this kind of notation on his other work. I look again at the face of Hamlet, and seeing eyes that betray shock more than inquisitiveness, I follow his gaze across the stone wall. There, sculpted as a relief in the background rock, is another face. Who is this? It's been years since I read the play. I could understand why Charles had given Rupert a painting of Socrates with a student, but how is Hamlet related to me? From my overstuffed bookcase, I retrieve a tattered copy of the complete works of Shakespeare. Cradling the volume in one hand, I guide my thumb along the pages, letting them fall until I find Hamlet, Prince of Denmark, Act 1, Scene 5.
Ooh, I wonder what happens next. Well, thank you so much, Susan. We're going to take a short break now.